Welcome to the 155 Election Podcast. Interviews with candidates running for mayor, city council, and school board trustee in Hamilton, Ontario. Episode 145. Ted McMeekin, you are running for city councilor in Ward 15. Welcome to the 155 Podcast.
Well, thanks, Joey. I'm glad you're doing this.
Firstly, tell us a little bit about yourself.
I was born and raised in Hamilton, born in the North End, grew up about a 7-iron away from City Hall with my grandmother. Then we moved to the East Mountain and then the West Mountain, and I was privileged to represent Ward 7 for 2 terms in Hamilton as the youngest member of City Council. And later, after several different careers at Mohawk Bookstore, the United Church of Canada, I had the good fortune to be elected mayor of the town of Flamborough, and subsequently 5 terms as the MPP. What else can I say? I ran an award-winning bookstore, Chapters More Than a Bookstore. I was vice president at the Flamborough Chamber and chair of the Waterdown BIA, so I have roots there.
Why are you running?
Well, this is my city. I love it. It's going through an interesting and difficult period in its history. And I always have judged people, my kids, I've taught them that the only way to judge people is do they hold themselves accountable for their giftedness. My kids have challenged me. My little guy, my grandson, we were sitting in the living room and he was babbling away. And one of my kids said, "What do you think Milo's saying to you, Dad?" And I said, I think he's saying, "Grandpa, what are you doing about climate change? What are you doing about homelessness?" And I stopped, and one of my girls said, "Dad, what are you doing about climate change and homelessness? You know, you should run." And so I made that decision. I'm committed to this city and making it strong and caring and sustainable.
Do you live in Ward 15, yes or no?
No.
Does it matter if one lives in the community one seeks to represent?
Well, it depends on the circumstance. I would generally say, yeah, often. But in my specific case, 37 of the last 41 years, my wife and I both lived in either Waterdown or Carlisle. Professionally, we were a couple that spent our entire 37 years working there. I was mission and service officer out of the number 6 highway office for the United Church. Subsequently ran an award-winning bookstore in town. I was vice president of the chamber. Was chair of the Waterdown BIA, very concerned about business, particularly post-pandemic. And as an aside, I happened to serve 2 terms as mayor of the town and 5 terms as its MPP, including 10 years in cabinet. Maybe that qualifies me, even though I'm 3 minutes literally by car outside of Ward 15. When you live 37 years in a community as wonderful as East Flamborough, when you come back, it's like coming home.
How have you contributed to your community and our city?
Wow. I'm a lifetime volunteer. Since I was 16, I've been engaged in trying to build stronger fabric. I was president of the YMCA. I was president of the Lung Association. I chaired the Mental Health Education Committee in Hamilton. I was an overseas volunteer, worked in a refugee camp in Lebanon with the Y. You know, I have been very engaged in all kinds of charity work. And of course, I've always seen public service as an obligation, not an option. And that is reflected in my political activities and career.
What are 2 of your priorities for Ward 15 and 2 of your priorities for Hamilton as a whole?
Well, I think I want to try to help Hamilton understand Ward 15. It's not just a flyover zone, and I want to help the good folk in East Flamborough develop a little bit greater affinity with the city and with each other. I don't know if you know this, Joey, but 70% of the people in East Flamborough are longer-time residents. About 30% are newcomers. Of the people that work in East Flamborough, 61% of them work in Halton or the GTA. So there's, in many specific ways, there's more of an affinity with Halton and going east than there is with Hamilton. I think the city needs to understand that. We need to understand the city better in East Flamborough, and we need to work together at becoming better partners, both locally and between East Flamborough and the city. The second point is empowerment. Winston Churchill once said, "The problem with democracy is not enough people are involved." And I know you understand that firsthand, given some of your experiences in the city. There's currently a community council, which the incumbent has been listening to, and that's good. They're good people. I'd like to supplement the current community council with 6 additional members. all of which will be coming hopefully from the new part of the Waterdown community in particular, so that we can have that perspective reflected. Of course, it touches on the broader issue of how many great ideas never get acted upon because nobody's heard them. And I think that happens both in East Flamborough and decidedly in the city of Hamilton. I think we need to do a much better job of finding creative entrepreneurial ways of listening to the folk we have the privilege of representing. There's so many citywide priorities. I think first and foremost, we've got a $3.2 billion cumulative infrastructure backlog, which we're tacking inadequately, in my opinion. Part of the problem, a major part of the problem, Joey, is that we have an assessment ratio, which is 14% industrial commercial to 86% residential. What's that mean? Well, if you have $2 million homes, one in Hamilton and one in Toronto, because the assessment ratio in Toronto is basically 50-50, they pay 40% less in property taxes. So it encumbers Hamilton around being able to do some of the new creative things we need to do. So we need to work on building up that industrial commercial base. The second point I would raise is all the code red related stuff, Joey. Bobby Kennedy, whose campaign I worked on back in 68, said that we ought to help the poor and the vulnerable and those who are having trouble because we love them. But even if we can't bring ourselves to say, I love you, we ought to do it because it's in our own best economic interest to do so. And I think with the evidence that we gathered, we have kids growing up in homes of limited means, but they have unlimited potential. And sadly, very sadly, they're more likely not to meet that potential given the circumstances they have. So we need to address it. That's part of why I led the effort out of Queen's Park for the basic income pilot, which was and some of the homelessness stuff that we're currently dealing with.
What are three skills you will bring to elected office that makes you the best choice to represent Ward 15 on Hamilton City Council?
I don't want to sound arrogant, but I think first and foremost, I think I know what I'm doing based on a lot of acquired life skills that I've had opportunities to develop. I've always had the ability to bring people together. I think you can disagree without being disagreeable, and I think there's a real need to be able to build ad hoc issue-based coalitions that move us forward in a nonpartisan way. I think that is really important. I think we need to bring innovation, creativity, and entrepreneurial spirit, and a little bit of a focus on how to make our city not only more sustainable, but more playful for families.
The following preamble leads to questions regarding honesty and transparency. Let's presume that you are elected. During your first few weeks, you will be briefed regarding what City Hall refers to as confidential matters. We do not know what confidential matters are presently being withheld from the citizens of Hamilton. All four councillors first elected in 2018 initially voted to support the Coots Paradise cover-up before three of the new councillors began voting against the continuing cover-up. The Municipal Act prohibits members of council from releasing information the majority of council deems confidential. I will note that as Minister of Municipal Affairs, you amended the act and you gave council more permissible reasons for exemption to the open meeting requirement. With all of this in mind, what principles and advice will help you determine what information should be confidential and what information should be made public?
Well, good judgment's based on experience, and experience invariably on bad judgment. You can go in camera on certain matters, and you need to strictly adhere to the terms and conditions of that. And by the way, when you're in camera getting legal advice, you don't always have to take it, particularly when it might be obvious to you upon some sober reflection that it's not in your best interest or the best interest of the city to take that advice. As Minister of Municipal Affairs and Housing, when we had significant difficulties raised by citizens in a municipality, invariably, Joey, it was because the council either went into or came out of in-camera meetings inappropriately. And so I think that's something, as you say, we don't know what all the issues are. I want to get a refresher on that straight up so that I can discern what perhaps should and more importantly, what shouldn't be in camera. I'd love to see in-camera sessions taped as well, because there are a number of potential legal consequences, and it would be helpful to know, without this political spin, what the nature of the conversation in camera was.
The Red Hill Inquiry will issue its report early in the next term of council. The revelations regarding how City Hall ignored problems on the expressway and the toxic culture at City Hall, which silenced good people are shocking. How do you plan to review and consider the final inquiry report when the commission releases its findings and recommendations?
Well, let me say this. I think truth, trust, and transparency go together. Truth is foundational to a democracy. It's not optional. And we have the right to the truth. And when we don't celebrate that and practice that, rapidly we lose trust. And once you lose trust politically, the game's over. Transparency is tricky. Interestingly, on the Red Heel Creek, it appears the transparency problem was an internal one. It wasn't withholding information from the public, as it was anyways, but withholding information, I hear from some of the colleagues down there, from counsel. And, well, no one's guilty. We're all responsible. I found it stunningly difficult to understand the argument that was put by Councillor Clark and others that we need to have a judicial inquiry in order to ensure, absolutely ensure, complete transparency on this file. And then the city refused to release 47 documents. The judge had to go to court to get that, as I understand it, get that sorted out. And the cost escalated from between $2 and $3 million now to closer to $30 million. And that's shameful. And I think that will be part of the legacy of this council, in addition to some of the other issues that you've raised. It'll be the kind of thing people write history essays on.
The construction of the B-Line LRT will begin during this term of council. It will be the largest construction project in Hamilton's recent history. How do you plan to respond to construction challenges and opportunities?
Well, I think we need to work with the businesses along that stretch. I know the Chamber of Commerce did a number of workshops to help prepare small businesses. I only know that because two of my three daughters ran small businesses in that corridor. The pandemic sent one under. The other survived because she had a creative marketing approach and she kind of went to mail order. So we need to look at that. You got to keep the LRT in perspective. It is the single most significant greenhouse gas initiative that this city has undertaken ever. It's going to save 40% of the B-Line cost. It'd be 40% less expensive to run it. It's being constructed by and through federal and provincial dollars. There is a potential community benefit, which Carl Andrus and his community benefits team are working on around social housing along there. And ultimately, it will, if things come together properly, it will free up B-Line buses for assignment to very needy transportation requirements in suburban communities.
Before we turn to land use planning, let's have a lighter question. What is something interesting or unique within Ward 15 that you believe the rest of Hamilton should know about?
Well, I think it's one of the best places to raise a family and age in place, which is officially the mission of the city. It's also a community with tremendous heritage, and we have about five mini heritage museums spread throughout Flamborough. There are some communities, Dundas would be a good example, where there's a museum and archives that's very well developed. I think heritage is something that we need to hold precious and make sure that it's recorded so that we don't lose it.
City Council decides land use, planning, and zoning. It decides where housing and businesses are located and the type of housing and businesses which are permitted in locations. There are three questions on this topic. The new watered-down secondary plan and transportation master plan lays out the plan for modest intensification within Ward 15's urban area, with the goal of creating safe, active transportation corridors in Watertown. How will you implement the secondary and transportation plan? Please provide two specific plan goals you hope to achieve during the upcoming term of council beyond the implementation of the bypass road.
Well, it's a good start. One of the big issues in Flamborough, East Flamborough in particular, has to do with traffic calming. And of course, it does relate to the so-called bypass. It also relates to many of the new areas that worry about the safety of their kids and the need to lower speed limits, which, to City Council's credit, they've done, by the way, and maybe speed bumps, that sort of thing. The fundamental challenge that we have is understanding and interpreting things that have happened. The secondary plan, for example, has been 3 years in the making, and it was, as I referenced earlier, a good start, as is the transportation planning. But that needs to be forged in the fires of consultation and checking things out with the local populace around that. For example, on the transportation plan, it's projected that 35% of the routes will be entirely within the Watertown Carlisle area. 29% of the routes would be into Halton, and about 26% into Hamilton. Now, that may be a very accurate reflection of the need, but we need to confirm that. The other thing around the secondary plan in particular is the heritage nature of the core of the Victorian village. There are 130 properties in the heritage area. It's the largest heritage area, designated heritage area in Hamilton. And some great progress was made around the secondary plan protecting that. And then all of a sudden there was a generic zoning change, which raised the specter of 4 to 6 story construction, perhaps in the middle of a heritage area. And it made people angry in that area, primarily because nobody after the 3 years of consultation consulted with them on that change. That was a bit of an issue up in Ancaster with Councillor Ferguson, as you may recall. So that needs to be cleared up, and we need to make sure that when planners talk about a C5A zoning, which allows up to 6 stories, that is done very carefully with the heritage folk that you just promised would be literally left alone.
Large commercial plaza sites are converting into mixed-use mid-rise development across Hamilton. Dundas Street has a few of these sites. At present, there is no city planning policy specific to commercial to mixed-use redevelopment. What is your vision for this type of redevelopment, and how will you achieve that vision?
Well, there should be a plan. Let's be brutally blunt about it. There should be a plan. You know, as we move into a period where, by definition, densities are going to have to increase if we're going to protect prime agricultural land, we need creative ways to house people while ensuring that businesses can survive. I know down in the Eastgate Mall area, they're now looking at a redevelopment that sees niche stores on the base with housing opportunities above. Those are some creative things that we can do that can help us build stronger native-oriented communities, and also do the planning that will make local businesses, particularly small niche businesses, much more viable.
The Transportation Master Plan states 35% of trips originating in Waterdown are to destinations within the town, 29% are destined to other points in Hamilton, and 22% are destined to Halton. What is your vision for transportation links within and beyond Waterdown?
Well, I don't have a specific vision of that at the moment, but I have an absolute commitment to consulting with the community I hope to be privileged to represent to ensure that the authentic needs of the community are reflected in that. Aristotle once mused that if you want to know if the shoe fits, ask the person who wears it, not the person who made it. I want to make sure that the routes that are assigned are made by people who are intent on using them and that it reflects a reasonable, authentic, and inexpensive way of getting from point one to point two as we build, hopefully, a more pedestrian culture as a city.
Road safety is a significant issue in Ward 15, with numerous pedestrian deaths in recent years which have shocked and saddened the community. What is your plan to address road safety? Please provide 3 detailed specifics of your plan.
Well, I'm hearing that traffic calming is significant. I think the orientation to providing proactively a more focused look at how we build more pedestrian community and some alternate modes of transit. Bicycle lanes are often come up as an issue. I love to ride a bike, but when I ride a bike right now, I ride it in the gym. And I do that because it's not, in my opinion, where I live, safe enough. So I think the bike lanes have really got to be safe and protected. There need to be barriers put in place that restrict, you know, where cars can go and, more importantly, allow bikes to freely travel the course they're on without fear of being injured. So pedestrian orientation, more walking culture, handling the calming both with the bypass and some of the calming efforts in neighborhood communities, and strictly enforcing truck route issues. That's a problem when major trucks want to take a shortcut through your community along a road that's not designated. We need to watch for that. We tragically had a young person killed in one of those types of accidents not that long ago. So those are some of the things I would plan to do, always in consultation with the community, though.
Turning to governance and expertise, let's use the idea that it takes 10,000 hours to master a skill or trade and apply it to being a municipal councillor. One person cannot be an expert in all matters which come before council for a decision. How will you gain the necessary learning to be able to make informed decisions? What reading do you do? What professional development will you look for? And what types of people will you seek advice from?
I begin my day every day by reading 5 newspapers. I listen to too much CNN, so I get the American perspective on a lot of stuff, and CBC, of course. I'm a prolific reader as a former owner of Chapters in Waterdown. It was great when I had the store because I could read anything I could take home, right? So that is really important. In all likelihood, there are going to be between 7 to 10 new members of Hamilton City Council. I think it's absolutely important that we elect people, the people we think best can bring a skill set there, experience there, the ability to get things done there. And dare I say it, I think my background as a social planner, community development person, business person in particular, educator, active in some church work for a number of years. And that's to exclude, but I need to include all of the political background as well. I've worked with some wonderful people over the years, and we've accomplished some marvelous things together, particularly in the Waterdown community, by, in fact, ensuring that we work together. There are skills, there are opportunities. Mom used to say to me when I was growing up, she said, "Ted, what's a giant obstacle except a brilliant opportunity in disguise?" I kind of see venturing back to the public arena, which I don't see as an option, but an obligation, as part of that giant obstacle that needs to be creatively overcome.
What are 2 changes you will propose to improve city services?
I think counselors probably need to be better staffed, frankly. I have to look at that in detail and talk to my colleagues about it. But, you know, when we can spend millions and millions of dollars on road work that's at best, on a good day, okay, but at best maybe questionable, I think finding another, it wouldn't take any more than $1 million, I suspect, to ensure that where there are community councils in communities that they can be affirmed and supported. I spoke to 4 counselors about agendas and how they manage, and all of them said to me, I don't even read the agenda. I don't go to it. I just read the executive summary. You know, all day meetings, 12-hour meetings, 4 in 1 week, is not a very good way to try to govern the city. I think every member of council needs to take a course on diversity training. That's important. I've been through a couple of them, and they've been helpful to me. I think we need to understand and call people out when they abuse each other or counselor to counselor or the constituents they represent. I don't think there's any room for that. We need to be able to disagree without being disagreeable, and we need to have a code of conduct around how we behave with each other, and as importantly, maybe more importantly, the constituents we're privileged to represent.
What are 2 changes you will propose to improve quality of life in Hamilton?
Well, I think we really need to focus on environmental vigilance. When I was Minister of Municipal Affairs, a number of requirements were put in place, which I take responsibility for. One was to require all 444 municipalities to have an environment climate change strategy. Another was around public safety and wellness task group, which was a little late getting started, but eventually got off the ground. Things around secondary plans and such. I think there needs to be a connect between some of the creative ideas that have been put in place and the implementation of those creative ideas. I've often say there's a difference between a great idea and an implementable great idea, and usually that's a commitment to follow through. And so I would like to follow through on some of those. The other thing I'm really concerned about, when I was Minister of Municipal Affairs, I met every 6 weeks with AMO, the Association of Municipalities of Ontario. And we made a commitment to AMO that we would not do anything as a government that had a fiscal implication on municipal governance without first consulting with them. It didn't mean we wouldn't do it, but it meant we would consult and take their best advice. That worked very well. The other thing that worked very well, if you were at the table, and Hamilton wasn't always at the table, was to hear all of the great ideas that one could embrace, copy, duplicate that are working in other municipalities. So I'd like to see our focus on partnerships with AMO and building that strongly so that mostly we can share and learn, as well as partnerships with both senior levels of government. And that relates back to what I was sharing. I don't know if you got it on tape about the 14% to 86% tax ratio. A lot of things Hamilton can't do because fiscally it's just difficult, if not impossible. So we need to have those financial partnerships enhanced, more on conditional funding. When the cap and trade was canceled, that lost municipalities about $6 billion in potential retrofit supports for municipal facilities and schools. More uploading. We did some uploading, but there's more that can be done. So those are all things that we could focus on.
It's 2026. The Public Record is writing a review of the four-year council term that is just ending. What three words do you hope we will use to describe your term on council, and what three words do you hope will describe council as a whole?
Smart, informed, and caring. Council as a whole, I would say the same thing.
Thank you. That's the end of the prepared questions you were sent in advance. Do you have any closing remarks you wish to share?
I do. The closing remarks that I would like to share. Many, many years ago, when I was running for mayor in the town of Flamborough, I met with the late, great Sterling Hunt, a Wyndon farmer, and he gave me great advice. He said, Ted, tell the folk what's broke and how you're going to fix it. That was good advice then. It remains good advice today. And often in the face of having to make a difficult decision, I would reflect on that and Sterling's wise words. But there's something equally important to fixing the things that are broken. And that's discerning, identifying, and treasuring, and working hard at the things we can't live without. For example, if we can't breathe, nothing else matters. If we don't have clean, drinkable water, we're in trouble. If we lose the ability to grow our own food, particularly with this, all the supply chain problems we have, then shame on us. If there are people in our community who are in a code red situation or homeless, particularly in a pandemic without a roof over their heads, then that's wrong. We need to do something about that. And finally, around empowerment, if we don't create significant and authentic opportunities for people to come together and to reflect together through an official plan process or consultation or community councils, their hopes and their dreams, then we're going to be stymied in terms of how we can reach out to, care about each other, and love each other. And I think that those are important things I would add.
And lastly, how do people find out more about your platform and get in touch with you?
We've invited people for several weeks now to check our website. They can go to McMeekin, big M, small c, big M, double E, K, I, N, four, the number four, big W, Ward, A-R-D, small letters, 15, @gmail.com.
This has been episode 145 of the Public Records, the 155 podcast. Thank you to the Hamilton Public Library for the use of their makerspaces to record these podcasts. Thank you to the readers and listeners of the Public Record for your support. You can visit thepublicrecord.ca to get more City Hall coverage, sign up for my City Hall newsletter, and become a member of the Press Club to keep me covering Hamilton City Hall. Thank you.